What's going on and happy new year. You're listening to the Long Island Sound Podcast, your source for everything Isles and the only Islanders podcast to hope for a high-scoring winger for Christmas and end up with a lump of kunakle. Sorry, Tom. We know you've been playing well, but it worked for the bit. I'm one of your hosts, Damon Vettieri, and I'm joined this week by Kenny Iavero.
What's going on, guys? How's everyone doing in new year? Hope all is well.
2020, my brother.
Dude, I can't believe it. I've known you for way too long.
Way too long. I think we've probably known each other longer than Ben's been alive.
Dude, I was just going to say, it's probably been like 20 plus years, right? Like sports arena. When do you think that was?
Yeah,
like,
no, for sure. No, 15, 16 years old for me. So yeah, man, we're about 20.
How old are you now? 36? All right, okay. I'm 33, so. You know who drafted me in my hockey league? Jay Muro. I'm on Jay's team this year.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Full circle. Man. And for all of you who have no idea who that is, we're sorry. This is what you're going to get from a show that's just me and Kenny, because for years we've been driving in the car and screaming at each other about the Islanders and all the things they could, should, would have done. And it's all led up to this moment, this very episode.
Driving to Phillies game, driving to baseball games, only talking about hockey the entire time, watching the Mets get blown out.
Yeah, Mike Helfrich, legend. You know what I always remember? And then I promise we'll get into the Islanders stuff. So Kenny and I go to this game. I call him up one morning and I'm like, you want to do something stupid? And he's like, well, it depends. I said, do you want to drive to Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia and go watch the Mets? And he's like, yeah. So we drive out there and literally it's a 1 o'clock game. There is a bachelor party that's there that have not stopped drinking from the night before. And these kids are hammered and they're sitting in like the upper deck with us. And they're just slapping each other across the face because they think it's funny. And we're watching these kids crab walk down the aisles and dance and pull their shirts over their head and slap each other. It was way better than watching the Mets get blown out 10-0 because Mike Pelfrey
can't. Wasn't it like 14-0? It was worse than 10.
It was so bad. We rooted for a lot of bad sports teams in our day. So anyway, all right, let's get to the Isles. A team that is obviously a lot better than that Mets team back in whenever that was, circa to mid-2000s, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
So the streak is long gone. It's in the distant past. The Islanders have definitely come back down to earth. They've leveled off. They've regressed. Whatever you want to say, they are now. Their last 10 games, they're a 5-4-1. So they're basically playing 500 hockey, which – you know, it's not the end of the world, but it certainly erased the cushion that they had earlier in the season. I mean, the Metro's creeping up. Right now, if you look at the standings today, Washington obviously is the class of the Metro. They have been all season. They're at 65 points in 45 games. The Isles are in second, tied with Pittsburgh, although the Isles have played one less game at 57 points each. So they're trailing the Caps by 8, and they've kind of been 6 to 8 points behind the Caps all season. So the Caps have leveled off a little bit too. They were on a tear when the Isles were, which is why they didn't gain much ground on them. What scares me, though, is you've got Pittsburgh at 57 points, and then in the wild card, you've got Carolina and Philly at 52 points each. And they've both played more games than the Isles. The Isles have played the least amount just about in the conference. So they've got a game in hand on everybody.
Saving grace, though, is like Carolina, Philly, Florida, all those teams chasing them have all been 500. You know, it would be a real problem if Carolina and Philly went on a run when the Islanders are doing this. But it seems like, you know, this is why you need to win games early on in the season so you can have a cushion. So that way when you're sitting here January 10th, you know, it's okay to go 500, you know, for a couple games in a row. It's tough.
If that's the lull, I'm cool with that. If this is the dip, because you always come down from a high. Mm-hmm. So if this is the dip, I'm cool with it. If this is the norm, it's more concerning because then I don't think they're going to get – I certainly don't think they're going to get home ice, and they may even struggle to make the playoffs. I mean, they're 27-12-3, but they're only 6 points into the playoffs. Like, they've got a six-point cushion. Florida is on the outside looking in at 51 points. CBJ's even at 50. So it's not like we've got, like, this, like, 10-point gulf. And I know that usually when you really look at it by the end of the year, it's not these major point differences. It's usually like 6 points, 5 points, 4 points between playoff and non-playoff teams. But, you know, if you have a bad month, like, the conference can pass you. I mean, it's crazy what's going on right now.
I hate, like you said, like, you would think that after the Islanders going, you know, 10 in a row, 11 in a row, or 11 in one, you know, that we'd have a bigger cushion, like you just mentioned. But it's like there's not much separation. Even when you go on a 10-game winning streak, it's like, I don't know what they should do with it. I think, honestly, they should maybe restructure it. And this is a whole different topic, but it should be 3 points for a regulation win. And then 2 points for an overtime or a shootout, you know what I mean? Or because it would really incentivize teams to, you know, not go to overtime, which the Islanders are a team that does play a lot of shootout and overtime games. But that might give that separation to teams that are way better and do go on these bigger streaks to have a little bit more of a cushion. Because it's like, okay, the Islanders go on this crazy winning streak and all it equals is us being in the playoffs by 5 points. It's like, it just, I don't know. It just doesn't add up. Or
I'll tell you where it adds up. I'll tell you where it adds up. It adds up with league revenue, because they don't want these massive point gulfs. They want all the teams in till the very end. Yeah. You know, the last thing you want, like, what I get it.
It's a good thing, but it's a frustrating thing.
Right. Yes. No, I'm with you. From a pure sport and competition standpoint, a regulation win would give you 3 points. A shootout or overtime win would give you 2. An overtime loss or shootout loss would give you 1. And you lose in regulation, you get 0. I'm on board with that. But you're going to have these major differences with the haves and the have-nots of the league when it comes to wins. And first of all, I know the league doesn't want that. And second of all, like we talked about baseball at the top of the show, there's nothing worse than when you know your baseball team is not going to make the playoffs and it's like 2 months into the season. Because like no one goes to games. It's like, forget it, it's the worst.
Yeah, trust us. We're Mets fans.
Yeah, we know about that. We know a thing or two about that. So I think that the closest you're going to get is what they did this season, where they weighted from a tiebreaker perspective more this season. So I think that's the best you're going to get. But I hear you. I'd love to see that.
It's just frustrating, you know, because we finally go on like a crazy streak and it's like the separation is like we're only like 11 points ahead of the Rangers.
Right.
Like,
well, that's glass half empty. Right, glass half full. Yeah. Imagine if they didn't go on that streak, they might be in like, you know, third or fourth place in the wild card, you know, where they might not even be in the playoffs. So
I know it's scary. It's scary. Yeah. Like, what happens next year? Like, if we don't go on a crazy streak like this, like, we're gonna be fucking stressed out the entire season, like hoping that we're like scraping to a wild card position. I don't know. I kind of wish they would change it, but I understand that for the league parity and, you know, keeping people engaged throughout the entire season to, you know, just a hope. Like, even a team like Buffalo, it's like, you know, they started off hot, which they do every year. They're always the best team the first 2 or 3 months of the season, and they kind of like come back to reality. But you really think about it, a team like that is only 7 points out of the playoffs, and they're in the sixth in the wild card. It's like, right, no one's really out of it right now except for like Ottawa, New Jersey, Detroit. They're out of it. But Montreal, Buffalo, Rangers, Columbus, Florida, Philly, Carolina, they're all still in it, you know?
Sure. I used to have this formula that works most of the time, but lately it hasn't, and I think because the divisions have been so out of whack lately.
The Metro is so stacked. It's ridiculous. The best
division. It is. But what I used to always say is if you take your wins and your wins are greater than your regulation losses and your overtime losses, you get in the always like my unofficial formula, you know? So yeah, overtime losses are great and all, you get a point. But like, if you just look at it and you say, okay, your regulation wins are greater than regulation losses, shootout losses, you're in the playoffs. Well, right now that wouldn't stand to be true because the Panthers they would be 20. They're 23, 16, and 5. They're a point out of the playoffs, but they would have 23 wins and they'd have 21 losses if you add up their losses. So that necessarily wouldn't work. I think it would by the time everybody's done playing each other, but that's always been like my official wins, then total losses. We're in a good spot. I think if they did that 3-point for regulation wins, I think the way to maybe keep more teams in it is, what if you added one more wild card team and you had or two more wild card teams and you had the bottom two play each other, and then, you know, you kind of shuffle and maybe one team gets a bye or something like that. I mean, you could keep more teams in it that way. I mean, now we're going to be coming up on 32 teams. So maybe they are planning on doing something like that. And then I wouldn't be as – then it'd be fine, because you can have more points given and still kind of have the teams feeling like they have a shot, kind of like what baseball did a few years ago.
I would love that, honestly. I mean, it just seems like – I understand keeping it even, but a team that goes on an 11-game winning streak should have some sort of separation. And it's just like there really isn't. It's like you have to just play sick the entire year to have like – you know, I mean, but you really look, I don't know. You look at it, the Islanders have 42 games played and 57 points. It's like we're well ahead of schedule from last year. Yet we're still like kind of not thrilled, because we've seen this before. You look at the goal differential, and that's kind of like the thing that makes me a little bit worried. You got teams like Washington, they're a plus 30. And you got Pittsburgh plus 30, Boston plus 34, Tampa Bay plus 33, Toronto, Carolina, all plus 17, plus 22, and the Islanders are plus 12. And it's like, you know, that's really kind of like, you know, we're going to get to it with, you know, the whole lack of getting what we wanted for Christmas. That goal scorer, it's like we're just one guy away from being a plus 30 goal differential team that could win any given night, which we already are, but we kind of need that little extra offensive punch. You know,
we needed it last year. We need it this year.
Again, more than ever this year.
I mean, we're going to talk about it every show, because until that changes, this is the situation we're going to be in. And when you're losing to some of the bottom feeder teams, it becomes that much more apparent, because defense is not the problem. Goaltending is not the problem. It's always been the scoring. I mean, that plus 12 is not because we can't keep the puck out of our own net. It's because we can't put it in the opponent's net. I mean, we win low scoring games, but I don't think you're ever going to see the Islanders with a huge goal differential. They're just not with the roster as it's currently constructed. They're a team that will grind out the wins, and they'll win by a goal or two. They're not going to be putting up, you know, they're not going to be winning games 5-1. That's a rarity for this particular team. So, hey, if you're good with it, I want to go over the last five, because it's kind of been an interesting trend with the Islanders kind of playing to their competition. And, you know, they're beating real good teams and they're losing to real bad teams. And I don't know if it's just bad bounces, puck luck or whatever, but like it's becoming more and more of a trend that I've noticed. And like, I mean, it's good because – you know, it's like I tweeted something out where I was, you know, it was, you know, tongue in cheek, but like not really. Like this, the way that this team is playing, it's like they're either going to miss the playoffs completely or they're going to win the Stanley Cup, because they beat all the good teams, but they can't beat the bottom feeders. And it's like it's driving me nuts.
I feel like it's more of especially this time of year, teams like that we just mentioned, Detroit, New Jersey, Ottawa. Some of these bottom feeder teams, it's like they're playing with house money. It's very easy to play loose and fast and carefree when, you know, you kind of know that it doesn't matter. It always matters. But, you know, these teams that are way out of the playoffs that just, you know, you would need a 15-game winning streak to come back and be in a playoff hunt if you're a team like Ottawa or New Jersey. It's just over. So you play a team like New Jersey, it's like, they're a complete disaster, but then you get to overtime with them and they have like a bunch of like really high level skilled guys individually, yet as a whole playing as a team, it's kind of like they stink. But when you get to overtime against them, it's like, damn, these guys don't – like the Devils are one of the worst teams in the league, yet they still have some studs on their team that have high level skill. But you know, it's easy to play loose and fast when you're in ninth place and it doesn't really matter. A new coach, you know, whatever it might be. That's just one example. But I feel like maybe that's what it is. You know, once you get past January, a lot of these teams are, you know, like a guy like Duclair is lighting it up. Is he going to light it up if he was in a playoff hunt on a team like, you know, Philly or Carolina fighting for a playoff spot, or would he be putting up those points? So I just think it's like real easy for teams to, I don't know. It's just, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's like,
no, it's, totally. It's I mean, not,
every game
times,
doesn't mean a lot.
Right. When the pressure's off, when there's no expectations, when the team's playing, you know, playing free, like you said, I mean, they play a lot looser. You start to see a lot more players get the individual stats because they know they're, you know, they know the team's done. Like those teams that you mentioned are not making the playoffs. But I'm just more concerned with the quality of the play. And you know, again, it's going to happen, and it's a long season. But I mean, I'm at least, if I'm going to look at it from a positive standpoint, I'm happy. Look, they beat Washington 4-3. Then they lost to the Devils 2-1. They lost to Toronto 3-0. Then they go back. They shut out Colorado. And then they beat the Devils in overtime. So, you know, they beat two really good teams. They lost to a good team in Toronto, and they lost to a bad team, you know, with the Devils. So, but it, you know, if you go back even beyond that, it's still become a little troubling. But I mean, the Isles lately, they've got wins against Boston, they've got wins against the Caps, they've got wins against Colorado. Those are all teams that everybody talks about being in the hunt. So, that's a good thing. That's definitely a good thing. But yeah, I think part of what you're saying is true. I think, you know, we're going to get into it a little bit later on with the injuries, but I think losing Pelech was a little bit of a system shock. And now you've got, you know, Dobson in there and you know, some pairings that have changed. So it's going to take a little bit of time for the defense to kind of reset. And I think that's part of why they've been a little scrambly lately. But first topic I want to get into, because I think we've kind of touched on the standings and the general state of the team so far. I want to get into the goaltending, and I want to run some numbers by you, and then I want to ask you the question of, is this now Semyon Varlamov's team? And let me run the numbers first, and then you can answer, and you can tell me if you think it is or it isn't. So We talked about those last five games. Let's talk about who played in those games and how they performed. So against Washington, Varley got the start. 36 saves on 39 shots, got the win, 9.23 save percentage. Varley gets the start against New Jersey. 27 saves on 29 shots, 9.35 save percentage. He doesn't get the win, but he didn't get any scoring help from the forwards there, so, or from the team there. So not his fault. Toronto. Varley gets the start. 20 saves on 22 shots. Toronto scored an empty netter. 9.09 save percentage, probably his worst of the bunch. Colorado, Varley gets the start. Four in a row, Varley gets the start. 32 saves on 32 shots. Gets the shutout against his former team. Looked great that game. And then Trotz goes back to Greiss against Jersey. And Greiss gets the win. 30 saves on 32 shots, 9.14 save percentage. So season totals thus far, Greiss 2.59 goals against, Varley 2.3 goals against. Save percentage, Greiss 9.19, Varley 9.24. Wins, Greiss has 12, Varley has 15, and Greiss has zero shutouts, Varley's got two. Kenny, is this Varley's team now?
I would say, as of late, ever since Greiss went down, I would continue. It's tough because, I mean, it doesn't seem like Trotz has really felt like that's the case. He won't say it yet, and that doesn't mean he doesn't believe it, you know, privately, whatever he says publicly. But he's publicly said that, don't ask me who's the number one or 1A, so 1A or 1B, whatever it might be. As far as I go, I do believe that Varlamov, since Greiss kind of went down with whatever that dizziness thing or whatever issue he had, Varlamov has been playing better. You know, New Jersey, that game against New Jersey, Greiss in overtime, I feel like, you know, he let in a couple of bad goals, but in overtime he came up big. I think he was one of the reasons why they did actually end up getting 2 points in that game. It could have been worse. He just hasn't been consistent. You know, to run through his numbers the last five, which goes back way further, December 12th against Florida, 970. Then he plays against Nashville December 17th, gets lit up for his, you know, five goals, 667. Then the next game he comes back at 23rd, 914. Seems okay. Chicago gets lit up. And then New Jersey, 914. So Greiss right now is playing like the backup, that kind of like inconsistent play. It's hard for me to really get on Greiss, because it's, when you really think about it, if he's your backup, if your backup's going above 500 and keeping you in games, it's like you're pretty happy. And I feel like Greiss has done more than that. Also, you know, Varlamov has taken the reins here, which is a good thing. You know, I just don't know if it's the right move to let go of a guy like Greiss right now, because there are moments in the game where I just feel like it's definitely still the system, and I don't 100% trust Varlamov over Greiss that much, but I do have to admit that Varlamov has taken the starting role here and should be, you know, just let him go. Just let him play every 4 out of 5 games, the next 10. See what happens, you know? I mean, Greiss has not earned getting multiple games in a row at this point. I think early in the year he did, but they were both playing good. So, yeah, I do agree Varlamov has taken the reins here.
Yeah. I would say Greiss is probably top three, if not the best backup goalie in the league right now. I mean, maybe, ironically, Halak is probably up there too. But, you know, I think that Greiss has always been the kind of guy that if you put too much of a workload on him, you get diminishing returns. And I think his performance suffers. So I'm okay with alternating. I'm okay with giving Greiss 1 out of every 3 or even 4 starts if Varley keeps playing like this. I think you're right. I think to trade him, unless somebody is going to knock our socks off with what they're going to give us, I don't think you trade Greiss. I think, unfortunately, you're going to have to ride him out until the end of the year. And then depending on what goes on with the circus that is Ilya Sorokin, you know, did he make a trade request? Is he going to sign an extension in Russia? It doesn't look like he is, but it's so many question marks. I think you're going to have to ride Greiss till the end of the year and then let him walk in free agency. Or depending on what happens, if Sorokin doesn't come over, Greiss might want to stay. And, you know, it just depends on how much he wants, given how many games he plays and what his final numbers are going to be. So it'll be interesting to see. But, yeah, I think, you know, Lou kind of put himself in a corner by not re-signing Leonard and kind of putting all his eggs in the Varley basket, because if Sorokin... Now, right now, Varley looks good, but the intention was to have Sorokin come over and have our goalie of the future. Yeah, we don't know what the real deal is there. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think you keep Greiss, and I think he's going to play backup. Hopefully, whatever was going on with his dizziness was just a one-time thing, and this is not related to his play or why Trotz has been leaning on Varley more. But it is funny how they went every other game, you know, 30 some odd games into the season, and then all of a sudden it was like Varley's going to roll off 4 in a row. I mean, that, like, you know, that's a pretty stark difference there. But yeah, Greiss has been, you know, he's struggled a little bit in some of those games. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think, you know, still their numbers are both solid for where we're at right now. And I would take that, you know, the rest of the way.
Yeah. I just feel like maybe just something to look at, just, you know, this might not mean anything, but Igor Shestorkin, whatever you want to pronounce his name, he made his Rangers debut a couple games ago. I think he's, you know, I watched him play. He's very impressive, honestly. The Rangers always seem to have excellent goaltending. They can't miss with that. So, but, you know, maybe that Sorokin's paying attention to that. You know, him seeing that might sway him to be like, you know what, I definitely know I can do this. So I think that's a good thing, seeing a guy like that play for the Rangers that young. as far as getting the guy we want over here in Sorokin. You know, as far as the whole going every other game earlier on the year, it stinks because I feel like at times Grice was definitely, in my opinion, the better goalie than Varlamov, but didn't get the opportunity to go three or four in a row. And that might be for a reason. He, like you said, the bigger workload we give him, it seems like it's sick. It's awesome until it's not, you know, and then it kind of like levels out and then he gets hot again. But I just want to like say one thing, because I feel like the reason why Varlamov is doing so good is because he hasn't had the workload of a starter. You know, I don't think that's going to affect a guy like Sorokin coming over here. And I don't think it's a bad thing if Sorokin did come over and split time with Varlamov. I don't think Varlamov can play 60, 70 games. In my opinion, I don't think he can at this point. He really hasn't been able to do that the last few years. He's a little bit older. I feel like if Varlamov can play 50 games, you're going to get a great effort out of him and have amazing numbers like you're seeing right now. I would be scared to trade a guy like Grice and have it be Varlamov and Gibson all the rest of the way, you know, because sounds good until Varlamov struggles and it's like everyone's gonna be wishing they had Grice, you know. I just don't want everyone to forget about what Grice has done and what he is. I mean, still, the guy's, you know, I love him.
This conversation stems from something that I threw out when we all, you know, not on the show, but when we were talking about, you know, hey, maybe you trade Grice. But I know that that's really, I mean, it's not realistic. They would be crazy to do that. The only reason why I said that was because I felt like he was the one guy that maybe could get the Isles back something. And again, it would have to be something that really knocks our socks off in order to put the Isles in a risky position like that. Because, yeah, they don't have – Jacob Skarrick is not, you know, the backup answer. Gibson's not the backup answer. Jared Coro's not the backup answer. None of those guys I think are going to sniff the NHL anytime soon. I think, honestly, it's Sorokin or bust. I mean, if Sorokin doesn't come over, I'd rather see them sign Leonard and we have a Varley-Leonard combo and they can arm wrestle for number 40. I don't care.
But that would be sick.
I mean, that way, yeah. It all depends. I mean, you can't, in my opinion, the way the league is going right now, where you're not seeing guys, you know, playing 70 games out of 82, you know, they're splitting the time more because the playoffs is such a grind, I think, that, you know, you don't want to tie up too much salary in your goaltenders necessarily. So that's where I think we've kind of put ourselves in a corner a little bit with the money that they gave Varley. But again, if Sorokin comes over and he's on an entry level deal for a year or two or whatever, however the rules shake out when you're coming from the KHL, that's fine. I mean, you know, you can get creative, but I think either way, I think the stars would have to align for Grice to be back next year. I think you ride them out this year and then you see what happens with the assets that you have.
And I don't even want to consider the hate or the opinions of people who want to complain if Grice just plays out his contract and we don't get anything for him. Like that, just because the guy, you know, not everyone you're going to get something for. And I'm not about to trade him at the deadline just to get a draft pick, just so we can say in the offseason that, well, we let him play out his contract. We didn't get anything for him. Like, dude, this is, you know, if you're going to trade him for a guy like Taylor Hall and you want to take a risk like that, given Varlamov the starting job for a guy like that, okay. But you can't move Grice for anybody else. And there just isn't a need for goaltending right now. They're just – teams have their guys. I don't think any team is sitting there looking at, like, Grice is going to be our starter or lead us to the playoffs. You know, he's done that for us, but, you know, he was never – it's a different thing. Like, I can't imagine how hard it is for a goalie, like a starting goalie, to night after night play at a high level. It's different when you go into a season knowing that you're going to be at least splitting time with another guy. It's just a mental load off of your back, so to speak. Like, Grice can't handle being the number one, and I don't think Varlamov can either right now. I think it's perfect the way it is, and there's a reason why they did this.
It's a tandem, and it's the perfect, you know, it's the perfect situation for the Islanders, who win and lose by committee. So why would the goaltending be any different than any other aspect of this roster? So speaking of the roster, I think that's a good transition to one thing that has been plaguing the Isles since really the beginning of the season, even with the streak going on, and that's goal scoring. And, you know, it's funny. When we talk, you want to talk about things that we were so wrong on before the season started to where we are now? Jordan Eberle. Oof. We thought Jordan Eberle was going to be a 30-goal scorer.
That injury, though, you know, the early injury, in the season, I feel like it just – it definitely matters, you know, and it's still early. He's a second-half player, so let's just see. He scored last game.
Yep, no, he did, but right now, I mean, he's sitting at 4 goals. Ooh. He's sitting at 4 goals. Broussard has cooled off. Broussard's got, 8 goals. He's a +2. He's got 21 points, 8 goals, 13 assists. Bailey, he's kind of cooled off a little bit. You know what is absolutely insane about Josh Bailey? He's a -10. He's a -10. He is the absolute bottom of the Isles in plus minus. And look, I said on Twitter, and I know that Josh Bailey is basically like you can plug him anywhere you want. Like if you need a third line center real quick, you put him there. You need a third line wing, you put him there. You need a first line wing, you put him there. I want Bailey playing with Barzal more, and you're starting to see that happen now because of Bailey's vision, his intelligence. Matt Barzal's a workhorse, but Bailey has the vision, and he can help out. He's a little bit more responsible defensively. I like that Bailey, Bo, Barzy line. I like getting Lee back with Nelson and Eberle, and I think, the big issue right now, and again, it's another thing we've been talking about, is just, the identity of the third line. And, first we were trying to plug in guys from Bridgeport, and that didn't necessarily work out. Koivula didn't stick around. Wallstrom didn't stick around. Bardreau didn't stick around. And now you're in a situation where Kiefer Bellows has been hot for Bridgeport. He started the season terribly. He has been on absolute fire lately, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see him come up for a few games, but that's really not the answer. And, I wonder where they think the solution lies with goal scoring. I think Trotz has tried every combination he possibly can, minus, sprinkling in Casey Cizikas on the top lines. Komarov has done nicely with the Clutterbuck injury. And I think that's a perfect fourth line now with Komarov, Casey, and Matt Martin. I don't think you touch that. But we're still stuck with a third line that really has no identity. At least last year you knew it was a shutdown line. And Phil Pula scored some big goals for the Isles. You just don't have that this year. And I think it's been glaringly obvious. I mean, where, Michael Dal Cole, for as much, I see him get bashed all the time online, and justifiably so. At the same time, he's cheap. He's incredibly cheap. So, I don't think he's the reason why they're not lighting the world on fire. He does take up a roster spot, but like at some point, something has to give, and they have to change something, does it not?
I agree totally. I mean, and just looking at, just going back to Bailey, he's got one assist in the past 12 games. Like, his struggles, those, like, the minus numbers have really piled up the last 12 games. I mean, -4, -5, -6, -7, -10, -11. I mean, that's his minus. What is he, -10 right now? It's basically 10. All happened the past 12 games, which he's only had one assist. I don't know if he's playing through something right now, or he has been the guy who's been juggled around like endlessly. So maybe go back to juggling him around. It seems like he was doing better with that. I don't know. I think that he should be playing with Bailey. With Barzal, excuse me. It's just tough right now. As far as like Dal Cole goes, I don't mind him, but at the same time, you have other guys that are gonna be here that are getting paid more, that are doing the same kind of role that he's playing, but better. Yeah, they're getting paid more, but they're Komarov's better than Dal Cole. He's better defensively. He just does more. He's way more noticeable out there. So as far as I'm concerned, I feel like a guy like Del Col. You don't need him here. Bring up Bellows. He's on fire. We need goals right now. Bring up Bellows. Put him on the third line with Brassard and, you know, whoever else you want to plug in there.
Well, there you go. But that's the problem right there. That's the problem. The problem is you can't just call these guys up and then not put them with anybody.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a recipe for disaster. They're not going to get the, you know, they're not going to be taken under somebody's wing in that situation. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. And how down must the organization be? I mean, I know the fans are, but how down must the organization be in Andrew Ladd to be paying him the money they're paying him, and they can't even put him on the third line? They can't even put him on the third line on this team, making, what, $5.5 million? I mean, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke.
It is. I also think it's a good thing that we're not just forcing him on the third line if he doesn't deserve it, which is that's the Islanders. That's how the Islanders used to run things. You know what I mean? So it's a good thing that we're willing to have a guy in Bridgeport. Like, that's the right move. I just don't think their solution is something that we have within our organization right now, which is unfortunate.
Okay, and I get that. I get that. But we can't trade for a third line option.
Yeah,
I'm not asking for the world here. We can't trade for a solid third liner and give, you know, a second round pick or something. I mean, I see all the rumors online. Oh, yeah, I should go after Toffoli and all that. Like, forget even Tyler Toffoli. Like, they can't pluck somebody that, you know, would fit in on, you know, for the Isles on the third line with a little bit more skill than, you know, it's just like, I just don't know. It's bizarre to me. I mean, they made a trade. They traded John Stevens from Bridgeport. That's the first trade in however, you know, a billion days. Like, I mean, you got to do something with this roster. There's too many of the same flavors of ice cream in the store, right?
Yeah.
You go in and it's like, oh, we've got a whole we've got a whole store full of inventory, and you know, 70% is chocolate. Okay, well. You know, you're not going to serve all your customers. Now, that's kind of a weird analogy, but, like, you want to know who the chocolate flavors are? The chocolate flavors are Cal Clutterbuck, Leo Komarov, Matt Martin, Michael Dal Col, Tom Kunackle, Ross Johnston. Every single one of those guys take up roster spots. And, yes, you need one or two of those guys on your team as role players, and even maybe three, and have a whole line. That's that identity. But you can't have half of your roster that is that kind of player. That no puck possession. You know, this kind of dovetails into something, and I know Andrew Gross talked about it on his podcast, and it's been all over the Islanders, you know. It's been one of the storylines of the season, which is their lack of power plays and how they're bottom of the league and, like, by a mile. Like, the 30th team, I think, was Anaheim, and they're like, they've got like 18 less power plays than they do. But here's why: they don't possess the puck. So you've got these guys out there that are all grinders that dump and chase, and that dumping and chasing does not draw penalties. Possessing and sustained offensive pressure is what draws you penalties. So I don't think it's this grand conspiracy. I think it's pretty simple. You have the puck, you're going to draw penalties. You don't have the puck, you're going to take penalties. So, you know, it's kind of all the same kind of issues. And guys like Jordan Eberle are going to get points on the power play, and they're not getting as many opportunities. Even Anders Lee, I mean, he's not having a bad season. He's having, a decent season. You know, he's already got 13 goals. So he's on pace for over 20. But, like, He's a power play guy. He's in front tipping shots. Like, they're not getting so that hurts the numbers too. I mean, we're almost looking at like raw 5-on-5 numbers with the forwards, which isn't exactly fair, but that's what needs to change. Is you need some more guys that are going to help possess the puck. It can't just be Matt Barzal.
It seems like there's a lot of passengers. There's not a lot of guys who like drive the play and create on their own. It's like,
yeah, I wouldn't call them passengers. I'd call them
You know, I'm not saying they're like just chasers. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to make it sound like they're just they stink and they're not doing anything. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's players like Barzal who drive the play and create, you know. But other than that, it's like we really don't have a lot of guys who like carry the puck and create. You know, it's a lot of guys who just as soon as they get the puck, they're like dumping it. It's like, okay, what are we doing here? Like, and that's why I feel like I hate on Dal Colle so much, is because the guy was supposed to be drafted for like goal scoring skill, and he literally is just a guy who's just in position now. I don't understand like what he does other than that. So as far as I'm concerned, he shouldn't even be here. Like, I'd rather have Bellows make two mistakes a game and maybe get a puck on net or do something, or Wahlstrom, like anybody. It's like we just don't need another guy like that. And he's the cheapest option to just get rid of, because you're not going to be able to move, you know, Komarov, who,
right,
you know, gets way more hate for no reason. And the guy's like, you know, he's a weird skater. He's kind of sloppy and just throws himself around. But
he makes too much money for what he does. He's got zero goals, Ken. He's got zero, none, zero. So he's not getting it. You know, no one's getting excited about him. I could see Dal Colle being packaged because he's a cheap forward that's now shown that he can play in the NHL. And you know what? If Dal Colle was put in a situation where he could finish and chase the puck, I think he'd have some better numbers than what he has right now. But he falls into the black hole that is the third line. Now, how much of that is the fault of him just not being able to, you know, not having the talent to really control that puck? That's not really his game. You're right. He was drafted for one thing, but he was drafted as a goal scorer, as a pure sniper. Like, I remember when we drafted him, and then thinking him coming up, it was like, wow, he might be the sniper for JT, because JT can dish him the puck and he can bury it. But like, he was never going to drive the play. And now, you know, he's especially not going to score goals because he's not going to be on a line where anybody's really going to be able to distribute the puck to him. So I don't know if it's exactly fair. I think the organization knows that it's not quite the right role for him, but he must be a real good locker room guy. He must be good at listening to what Trotz wants. He doesn't take penalties. He plays the game pretty hard. And like we said, he's cheap. So he might be a throw-in on a trade, and don't be surprised if he does better somewhere else if they put him up, you know, with the right personnel. But you know,
he's the opposite of like Hosang, as far as like seems to be all like locker room and just like listening to stuff and knowing where to be. Like, if we can give Hosang like half of his awareness and, you know, the off the ice stuff, you know, he could be a player. But I mean, I don't want to be too unfair with him, but it's definitely not his fault. It's just I think I've seen enough. He just doesn't do it. Honestly, like, I can't see him going anywhere else and doing anything. I feel like this is it for him. Like, he's on a team. He's on the perfect team to be in the NHL. Because with Trotz, just don't be out of position. Just like, be in the right spot and you're gonna play. I can't see him playing on any other team where it's like you got to create some stuff on your own, not just rely on the system. He's lost. I mean, I just don't know. That. It's not his fault that I don't want to like bash on the guy, but I've seen enough with him. I want to take a chance with Bellows now. At this point, you guys had scored in how many games in a row at home or whatever it is. I mean,
I'd like to see what I'd like to see is them bring in a 3C option from another organization. Maybe you package Dal Colle and somebody else, or you give up, you know, Dal Colle and a
trade and a prospect or something. I don't even care. Like,
no, you can't, because that won't work with what my solution is. Oh. My solution is to trade for a 3C and then bring that 3C into the organization and call up Bellows at the same time, and then kind of make a third line out of some of your new toys.
I think that's the problem is like full circle though is like the parity in the league. Like, what team is just offloading people right now, January 10th? Everyone's still in it, other than like five teams in the whole.
You might be able to pluck somebody. Look, again, that's why GMs get paid the money they do. Go out there and find the solution. You know what the team needs. Go find it. There's 30 other teams out there right now. One of them is going to need something and have something that we want. So go out there and find it. You can't tell me that there's no options out there. And maybe there'll be more. The picture will develop as we get closer to the trade deadline. But, you know, don't leave points on the board. You wanna be in that two spot at least to get home ice at the Coliseum in the playoffs. Like, that is such a huge advantage for this team. And, you know, if they get through the first round, that's more money in ownership's pocket. They're more willing to spend in that case. You know, that's kind of what I'm thinking. So it kills me because I thought Brian Boyle would have been such a good option on this team. Mm-hmm. He's so big, and he would be a great veteran that you can then bring some of these kids on. And instead, they went the Broussard route, and Boyle went to Florida. And maybe he was always going there. No income tax, whatever. I don't know. But it's just, you know, that's a tough one. So I want to just bring up real quick. We would be certainly derelict in our duties if we did not talk about probably the biggest injury. Worst case scenario that could have happened for the defense, maybe if not for Ryan Pulock, and that is losing Hadam Pelech for the season. The freaking season. Freak accident in warmups, not on the ice. Like, as soon as I read that, like, in my mind, I pictured him, like, tripping on something and, like, stepping on his own Achilles tendon and cutting it, like, while he's, like, walking down the hall or something. Like, how does that happen? Like, just a freak, the two major injuries the Isles have right now are both freak accidents. Clutterbuck getting cut with the skate on his palm, and now Pelech in warmups, you know, routine stuff, blows out his Achilles tendon, and now that's a huge loss for this team.
Pelech is so good. I mean, the guy. He's such a good skater for a guy that big. His positioning, yeah, he makes a stupid play here, you know, every once in a while. But, you know, the other team's getting paid too, so that's going to happen. But, like, I don't know. I don't know if Dobson is the guy to step in and take on that role. I mean, it's definitely not first pair of minutes, I don't think. And it's not that Dobson doesn't look okay. I feel like he looks good until he doesn't. And whenever he does make a mistake, it leads to a goal. Like, he's perfect until he literally lets up a play that leads to a goal. It's just like,
well, he's 20 years old.
He's 20 years old. Yeah, I know. Mean, I was. Yeah. Yep. So, I can't complain.
This is all bonus for him to have this experience at this age is definitely a bonus. I think he's fine getting bottom pairing minutes. I know that they called up Aho, then they sent him back down. This weekend, the Isles only have a game against Boston. Bridgeport's in Springfield on Friday, and then they're home Saturday and Sunday against the Checkers and against the Rocket. So maybe the thought is if, you know, something happens with one of the other defensemen that they can bring somebody from Bridgeport in pretty quickly because they're not going to be that far. Maybe that's why they sent Aho back so he can play. But, you know, Aho, I know he's got points, but, you know, he changes the dynamic. Dobson's a big boy, and the Isles stay big on defense. Aho is small, you know, smaller anyway. So I think he'll bring some offense to the team, but I don't know if he's going to bring that, you know, that same. I mean, Pelech's like a stick check machine. I mean, that dude just, like, out of nowhere, he's got the fastest stick, like. It's just, it's going to hurt. And, you know, what it does, unfortunately, is it just messes with the depth chart where now you've got, you know, you're going to have Taves or Mayfield or even Johnny Boychuk playing against, you know, some of the top, you know, top forward pairings. And, you know, you're going to get some mismatches that you wouldn't have if Pelech was in the lineup. So that's killer. That's killer. And it also takes away from now us being able to maybe move one of those D-men that we had to try to get some offensive help. I think that pretty much takes that option off the table. And that's a huge blow to this team. So, you know, that's a rough one. That's a really, really tough one. And I think that's probably, like I said, one of the worst. I mean, apart from Matt Barzal going down or Ryan Pulock, I don't know if there's another injury that's worse than that. And the goaltenders, maybe. I mean, that's tough.
That's huge. I mean, I don't know. You go back and look at when Gartsnow protected Pelech in that that expansion draft. And, you know, I was high on Pelech just because, like, you look at a guy that size, his skating ability, you just knew that once he figured it out, he was going to be a complete stud. I mean, he might be even – if he had a shot like Pulak, he'd be better than Pulak. That's the only thing that Pulak does better than him is he has a crazy slap shot. Pelech can go end-to-end, you know, and make it look easy. Like, he's such a good skater, and for that size guy, it's like, ugh. Such a huge loss. He's one of the most underrated defensemen in the entire league. If not, you know, they both might be. Pulak and Pelech might be the most underrated top pair in the entire league.
Well, they're so great together because Pelech is such a shutdown defenseman, and Pulak's got, you know, some offensive skill there that, you know, the two of them together are just, they're so steady. And I hope that, you know, he has a full recovery and this doesn't, you know, doesn't slow him down at all, because that would be such a shame. Because I mean, I know we got defensive prospects, but man, Pelech is just, you know, he's somebody that this team can ride for the next, you know, 5 to 7 years. You know,
where would you put Aho if you were gonna put him into the lineup? Like, what would be the pairings?
You'd have to basically keep it as is, and maybe just have Aho and Dobson alternating on that bottom pairing. You know, just see kind of who's playing better. Like, Taves has been looking good as far as, like, his offensive output, but he's been making some blunders, too, because he's getting leaned on more. You know, and don't forget, this is his first full season in the league now. So, you know, he's still getting his legs under him as far as what the league's all about and what it takes to, you know, play at that kind of level for a full 82-game season. You know, so I don't know. I think right now it's fine with Dobson playing. I don't think it's a major issue. But again, I don't know if Aho is the answer. I think that's something where if they start to struggle, they may have to bring some help from outside the organization again. But under the Lou Lamoriello regime, that's not an option. We have we live and operate in a bubble. And, you know, like, we can't make trades. So
I feel like Dobson, you know, like, all right, the guy's been the entire season has been sitting in the press box. He's had no time to get in a rhythm and feel. And, you know, I don't know anything about what that's like playing at the NHL level. But, you know, it, at any level of any sport you're playing, if you're sitting there watching and you get thrown in, it's hard to get the timing. I mean, it must be incredibly hard at that level.
Yeah.
I want to give him till the end of the if by February 1st he's still making those mistakes that he's making, then I would be worried. But he looks great out there until he just has that one or two plays that I'm sure they're working on. And also I want to, like, go against my own thought here. He's a guy that does take a little bit of risk. He does skate the puck in and try to pinch in offensively. That is his style of play. And
he's
a smooth skater,
isn't he, man? For a big kid, that kid moves.
Forget he's 6'4". Like, he doesn't skate like he is.
He's huge, but he is so, like, he's just got it's like
he looks
just,
like Pelech,
he like glides out there. Like, he just looks so, like, light on his feet. When I see him, like, actually revving, like, you see he gets this, like, look in his eye, like, his body language changes, and I'm like, oh, he's about to open it up now. And, like, he can take that thing coast to coast.
Yeah, he reminds me of, like, a younger Pelech. Like, we're gonna have he's gonna be better than Pelech, but right now he's like Pelech was when in his rookie year, where it's like, oh man, you could see, like, this is a guy we'd protect in an expansion draft. Like, just his skating ability, his vision, his IQ out there, his size. Like, it's like he's got it all, man. And
I mean, you look at the best defensemen that, like, the highly touted, the, you know, Rasmus Dahlin and Victor Hedman. Like, it takes time.
Defenseman takes time.
3-4 years before they really start coming into their own. I mean, look at Pulak. Pulak 2 years ago, that the training camp under Doug Weight was like, he was the eighth guy on the depth chart, and you know, so it takes time. So I think the flashes that we see is just tapping the potential of what Noah Dobson can be for this team in the future. But you're dealing with Noah Dobson right now at just turned 20 years old, you know, green as can be defenseman, and you know that Trotz and Lou do not want to have to rely on him game in and game out. And I don't – so I this may be the time that actually forces Lou to do something. And maybe he can get a package. Maybe he can get a you know, a bottom six D-man and a 3C and move some pieces out. I mean, that would be – you know, I know I'm asking for the world here, but maybe, just maybe, we can get not one, but
I mean,
that we need in a trade.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're asking for a lot. You're talking about like a defense, a bottom six defenseman, maybe, and a 3C. It's a lot more realistic than us going out and getting Taylor Hall. Like, that's just, well, that's, in my opinion,
right,
you know.
And that's because, and that's why I look, it's fun to speculate. I know that, but that's why I never want to get too into the weeds with that stuff, because the chances that the Isles ever do that, I mean, slim to none. So why waste your breath on it? You know, go after the pieces you think you can get. But anyway, I mean, I just, yeah, when that was like a devastating blow. That was, you know, that was a rough injury to see.
I have a feeling he comes back earlier too. Like I know they said like regular season, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's back April 1st, a couple of games before. Like
Achilles though, man, that's a tough rehab, I thought.
True, it is. But you know what? Like medicine has come a long way. It ain't the same. Like you see guys who like tear their like MCL and they're, you know, back in crazy record time.
You just rub some dirt on it.
Shoot some stem cells into your you'll be fine,
there
dude.
You go. Get some stem cells, rub some dirt on it, and you're good to go. Drink some kombucha and some apple cider vinegar.
Go keto.
Right,
go
as right.
Keto.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So looking forward, they got tough game coming up tomorrow. So we're recording this Friday night. So whether you're listening to it on Saturday, the game's tonight. But anyway, they're playing the Bruins. Then they are doing a back-to-back Monday and Tuesday, the New York Rangers and the Detroit Red Wings. So let's see if this holds. They're playing a real good team, and then they're playing two not-so-good teams. So let's see if the Isles can get some points, take two out of three out of those games, and you know, start to build some momentum. They got they're riding a two-game winning streak. They take the next couple of games here. If they can beat Boston again. That'd be a statement. That's going to be a tough game. But if they drop the Boston game, come back and win that back to back, I think we'll be fine. I wouldn't be as worried about the Boston loss. So, anything you want to mention before we head out?
Yeah, I'm not going to the game. I'm going to the game on Thursday at the Coliseum versus the Rangers. So that should be fun.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. There you go. I'm a little bit worried though. I mean, I feel like this Shestorkin guy that the Rangers have been trotting out there, you know, the shooters don't know where to, you know, they don't know the tendencies yet, and he's just looked like unconscious, man. Like he's, you know,
who did he start against?
You know, he's on the Rangers, has no defensive help. Right. He played the Devils and
he played twice already.
He's played twice. He's won both.
Was he in the net for Colorado?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, he played against the Devils. They won 6-3. One of the goals like wasn't even his fault. Like it was like
Watch them move Georgiev and get a haul for him. Watch.
Well, that's what's gonna happen, dude.
This is what pisses me off is that team was bad for what, a couple of years, and they and the pieces that they have already.
I was thinking this last night, just randomly, how nice it must be to have like a quick rebuild when every player and wants to go to your team because you're in New York City and you pay the most money and you have unlimited pockets. You could just buy out your bad contracts if you mess up. I mean, think about the Islanders rebuild in 2008. If in 2010 they just added Panarin and Trouba. Mm-hmm. To the team, like it's mm-hmm. it's like the Rangers like the Rangers rebuild is not the same as the Islanders rebuild, like
no
at all. Okay, and I got to give the Rangers credit, they don't mess with goaltending. You tell me, mm-hmm. Tell me when the Rangers had bad goaltending. You might not have even people listening to this podcast. If you're 30 years old, you weren't even alive when the Rangers had bad goaltending, because they've always had good goaltending.
Yeah, so what? They went, who is, Richter. Okay, so Well,
Lundqvist.
Okay.
They're backups. Talbot, Ronta, Gorgiev. I mean, like, has there been a bad goaltender in the Rangers jersey in the last 30 years?
Yeah, it's true. That's a really good point.
They don't miss on goaltending.
You're absolutely right.
So it's like,
well,
okay,
to be fair, we might have the best goaltender in the state, but you know, until he actually comes over, I mean,
that's what's making me excited. You see this guy Shesterkin, and it's like Sorokin is put up better numbers. You know what I mean? He's better numbers. Man. Like, let's go. That must make him, like, him playing for the Rangers right now, having success in the NHL. Sorokin has to be looking at this and going, I could be a star too. Let's go.
I think he's in the NHL no matter what next year. What worries me are some of these rumors and everything about a trade, but also
trade for what? With trading Sorokin?
Hold on, what
rumors? Who has said?
Just, I don't know. I'm at a point where I'm so burned out on all this nonsense with him that, like, when something happens, it's kind of like the Hosang thing. It's like, I'm done talking about it. Like, when something happens, great. But, you know, look, you've got one of two options, because I think he's coming over no matter what. I think he sees this is the next, he's got nothing in the KHL. So one of two scenarios are going to happen. Number one, he comes out here and you have Ilya Sorokin on your roster. Hell yeah. Great, great situation. Option two, Varley's still playing well. We can sign a backup goalie and we trade Sorokin, whose stock has got to be through the roof, and get a real important piece to this team.
Only if he doesn't re-sign a long-term deal in the KHL,
This is all, I mean, but they've already extended a contract to him. He's not signing.
Oh, so he's coming here, dude. Listen, we did these moves. No, he's coming to the Islanders, dude. We got rid of Lehner. We got Varlamov, the same agent. He's Russian. Shesterkin's playing in the Rangers in New York.
That's your answer. He's Russian. The other guy's Russian. The agent's Russian. This is a perfect situation. They're all Russian. Dude, it's no issue.
No, I listen, that means something, man. Like, he's coming to the Islanders, all right? And we're going to have a stud goalie, and it's going to be fun, this Sorokin-Shesterkin battle for the next 10 years on the Islands. Like, let's go, man. Let's do this. Like, there's no reason why. And think of it. You're going to be paying Varlamov, even if you're overpaying Varlamov, which right now you're not. I mean, it looks great right now, but it is a 4-year deal. Who cares? It gives him time to get acclimated. You're paying Sorokin pennies. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't.
For now, yeah, which is fine.
For now.
That's how you give him all sorts of bonuses. You give him whatever bonuses throw at him.
20 wins.
You let the kid play 30 to 35 games next season.
Beautiful. Perfect, dude. I mean, and this is how you win a cup. You win a cup by having a guy like Sorokin here. Like, Sorokin in his second to his third, fourth year in the NHL, still be getting paid a little bit of money. That's when
I don't think it works like the standard RFAs based on age and all that. I think you can only, I think it's like a year or two, and then he can get paid the big bucks. He's going to be getting paid money way before then. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what? I want him to get paid money because I want him to stay here. I don't want to pay him pennies.
I'm all about it. By then, Ladd's contract will be off the books. There'll be some things that they can do to move around. They'll lose somebody to the Seattle expansion draft. Whatever. Like, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm good with that. So, all right. Well, you enjoy the game against the Rangers. Hopefully, they'll be coming in riding a 3-game winning streak. We'll see what happens against Boston. But you enjoy that game, man. And, hey, nice job. First podcast of 2020 for the Long Island Sound.
Yeah, buddy. Let's go, man.
Yeah, well, let's do it. As always, thank you for listening. We're on Anchor FM. We are on Spotify. We are on SoundCloud. We're on Apple Podcasts. So check us out there. Find our page on Facebook at the Long Island Sound. You can hit me up on Twitter at KaijuBlue13. Ben, this is the first episode Ben's missed, so he'll be back next week, but you can always hit up Ben on Twitter at LISound_. And for Ken, I am Damon. Thanks for listening. Later.